Okay, Cullen Carstens, welcome to the, I guess this is our third Ion Golf CBS Sports podcast. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm looking forward to it. How you been?
I've been doing good. This has been a long time coming. We've been planning this for like probably 18 months now and just now getting around to it.
I think so. I think there was a text sent back in 2004 like, hey, we should do a podcast. And then 9 years later, here we are. So time flies.
Yeah, you're following up. So you're the third guest we've had on. We had Jonathan Wall, who does equipment for PGAtour.com. And then we had Ian Baker Finch. So obviously a major winner. And you're the third. Yeah. So welcome to the crew.
Well, I don't know if I can. I don't know if I should be in the same room with those guys, much less on a podcast that they were on. But no, I'm happy to be here. I'm glad you invited me.
Yeah. Why don't you tell everybody that's listening kind of what, first of all, what you do right now, and then a little bit of what your background in golf is.
Okay. Right. I just started this past January. Actually, I got a job at Jacksonville State University, which is in Jacksonville, Alabama. I'm the new assistant men's and women's golf coach there. So I've been doing that. This was my first semester. You know, I really enjoyed it. I've kind of wanted to be a golf coach ever since I was in high school, really. My dad was my college golf coach at a little NAIA school that I played at in St. Louis. And I just kind of watched how he did it. And I really grew to love it and kind of got a passion for it. So, I kind of decided that that's the route I wanted to take. And I built a good relationship with Coach McGraw, who's actually the head golf coach at Oklahoma State, and he was nice enough to let me come down there and to Stillwater and volunteer for a couple of years and just kind of observe the team and see how they ran things. So so I did that for a little bit, and then I built a good relationship with a lot of the players there during the couple of years I was in Stillwater, and got to know a good buddy of mine, Peter Uline, pretty well. And when he turned pro early in 2012, he took me with him overseas, and so I caddied for him on the Challenge Tour and the European Tour, and I did that for a year, and I got done doing that last, I guess it was just before last Christmas, and that was right around the time this job opened up, so I've been just kind of perfect timing. It worked out, and I've been loving every minute of it, so.
Yeah, and I want to talk about you guys going over to Europe. I think a lot of people don't. First of all, I think a lot of people in the U.S. don't really pay a lot of attention to the European Tour, and the Challenge Tour is basically, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it kind of like the Web.com like their version of the Web.com Tour?
It is, yeah. I mean, the Challenge Tour is the, I guess what you would call the qualifying tour to get on the European Tour. I mean, it's not. You know, I guess the purses aren't quite as big as the web.com is here, but those are the guys over in Europe that are, you know, now it's the top 15 earn their cards from the Challenge Tour. They earn status on the full European Tour. It used to be top 20, I believe. Now they've reduced that to top 15. But yeah, so it was definitely experience. I mean, I never thought, you know, I'd been to Mexico once, in my life. That was the only time I'd ever left the country. And, so now here I am traveling to all these places that, you know, some of them I didn't even know they existed until I got there. But, it was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, it's a different language every week, a different currency every week, different food every week. You know, it was definitely a trip. So, but I learned a lot. I mean, the courses are different over there. I think, you know, Peter would tell you that too. I mean, playing over there, it just kind of, it adds so many more elements to your game, just because you're kind of stepping outside of your comfort zone. You know, him being an American player, and going over there and seeing some places that he'd never seen before either. You know, I think it helped him a lot too, but I love the experience, and I mean, I love doing it. So it was definitely a great year. Went by fast, so that's for sure.
Where was the place, see, you mentioned you went to a lot of different places. Where was the place where you woke up and you said, what am I, like, how did I get, like, what am I doing here? How did I get here?
Just one place? No, I mean, that could be, I mean, there was several places. The probably most random country that I got to go to would be Kazakhstan. And I didn't know anything about Kazakhstan, much less, you know, that there'd be a major golf tournament there. And that is actually the Challenge Tour's biggest tournament was in Kazakhstan. But, you know, all I knew about Kazakhstan was from watching Borat. So I didn't really know. I really didn't know what to expect going there, but I got there and I really liked it. I mean, it was great. The people were nice. The golf course was, you know, just fantastic. And you know, the hotel we stayed at was great and the food was great. And so it was one of those places that I left and I was like, you know, wow, that place is actually great. I don't know if I'll ever be back here, but I'm glad I got to see it.
Well, and, so that was good. And how does the European tour compare in terms of how popular it is overseas? How does it compare to, like, maybe the PGA Tour in America? Is it as popular as golf is over here, or is it more popular?
I think that's a good question. I want to say it's more popular in places, but the majority of the places it's not as popular. Like, I guess it just varies on, you know, event to event. Like, if you look at, for instance, if you take Wentworth, that they played over in England. I mean, that packs it in like it's a U.S. Open or just the same as a British Open or anything like that. I mean, you know, the people in England love golf, and same with Scotland and Ireland. I mean, they'll show up and, you know, support any event. You know, but then you'll have some smaller crowds at some different countries you go to, and I guess it just kind of depends. You know, here it's, you know, the tour is going to a different state every week, you know, but there it's a different country every week. So I guess, you know, people traveling over to, you know, if they're going to come and watch a tournament as a fan, you know, might be a little bit more difficult. But overall, I mean, all the tournaments we went to, there was usually the Challenge Tours. Obviously, there wasn't a lot of fans out, but there was some that had a good showing. But the European Tour events, I mean, they support them, you know, just like any other PGA Tour event here. So, my impression was the people over there, you know, love their golf. So it was great to see.
That is weird, though. I didn't even think about it, because you think about the golf media and golfers over here. They have to go to maybe, you know, from Georgia to Florida to Texas. But over there, it's like they're going from England to Portugal to Germany. And you kind of fill up your passport pretty quick.
Exactly, yeah. And, I mean, you're in France 1 week, then you're in Italy, then you're going to Switzerland, then you're just hopping all these different places. And, yeah, it's like a you know, I don't want to say, well, I mean, it is kind of theirs is a little bit more of a global tour. I mean, they have events, not just in Europe, but they have some, you know, in Asia, in Africa. So they're all over the place. You know, here we're just, you know, moving around from state to state in one country, but they're kind of spreading out all over the place.
Yeah. It's like if over here, whenever we have the British Open, everybody freaks out because it's at, you know, 8 a.m. instead of 3 a.m.
Yeah, I know. You mean I got to watch golf at 6 a.m. What's going on? But,
So like you said, you caddied for Peter over there for about a year. What was that like? I mean, you went into it not really having, I mean, you might've done it a couple times, but you had never done it as an actual job. Was it, I mean, did it kind of overwhelm you, or was it pretty normal?
It was, well, the summer before he actually turned, I had done a little bit. He got into the Transitions Championship down in Tampa as an amateur in early 2011, and I caddied for him in that. And that was my first, you know, I caddied in some, like, small tournaments, but then that was my first big tournament, a tour event. So that was a little nerve-wracking, but that was a lot of fun. I mean, I loved it. And that following summer, I caddied for him. He had gotten exemption to play in the AT&T. It's so the AT&T National, and I caddied for him in that. And then he got an exemption to play in the Nationwide event, based off of being the web.com event that was in Columbus, based off the fact that he was an All-American. So I caddied for him in those, and I caddied for him in a couple big amateur events. I caddied for him when he won the 2011, Northeast Am. And then I caddied for him in the Western Am. So I had been on the bag for him a couple times going into the event. But still, it was, you know, now it's my job, and here we are overseas and to a place I've never been, and, you know, it kind of opened my eyes at first, but it was, I mean, it was a lot of fun. I think I had it, pretty good from the standpoint of I was caddying for one of my really good friends. So we would still, you know, I'd see him, we'd go to dinner and, you know, we'd hang out off the course. You know, there was a week here or there that we roomed together. So it's not like, you know, I was just kind of on my own wondering around Europe, you know, wondering what I'm doing. But it was great. I mean, the fact that we were pretty good friends and we were pretty close made it a lot easier. And I think that was the most enjoyable part of it for sure. So.
Well, I feel like, you know, I obviously went to a couple tournaments here in Dallas and Fort Worth a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago, and just being around the course and talking to caddies and kind of being around them, it's kind of a weird life. Like you're on the road. I was talking to, I can't remember his name, but Derek Ernst, his caddy. And mm-hmm. I asked him where he lived, and he said, "Well, I don't know." He's like, "All my stuff's in storage right now. I don't really have a home." And I was like, "That's so weird. Like, it's just it's so different from the way that, you know, when you go through college and you think you're going to get this desk job and have a house and have two kids, you know, whatever. But it's just such a it's kind of a strange life, isn't it?"
It is. I mean, you're kind of. You're kind of a nomad, and I guess it just all a lot of it just depends on the situation you're in. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure Stevie Williams caddying for Adam Scott's not, you know, living out of a suitcase, but it just depends. I mean, I like it. It's something like that happened to me. I mean, I was moving, my lease was up in Stillwater at the place I was living in May, and in May I was getting ready to go back with Pete overseas. And so I had to pack up all my stuff. You know, I didn't really want to sign a new lease because I'm never going to be there except for a week or two here and there every 2 months or so. So I took all my stuff. I moved it into my family's house, which they had just moved to Memphis that same month. So they're moving all their stuff. Plus I'm trying to move my stuff in and just kind of put it in a corner room to just kind of stay there. So I was actually just staying there for the week or two that I'd be home here or there. You know, obviously until I moved down here to Alabama. So yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, there was, you know, and I don't know, I think a lot of caddies over there was a lot of English caddies. So they could get home for weekends here or there, or like an off week. It was a lot easier for them to kind of get back home to their friends and family and where they live versus us. We're having to go, you know, back across the ocean. So it wasn't as convenient,
go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, it's just, it is a lot of living out of a suitcase, you know, but I think that's part of the excitement of the job, I guess. So.
Well, and the other thing I always wonder about is, so traditionally, and correct me if I'm wrong, but traditionally caddies get paid, I believe it's 10% if their player wins the tournament, 8% for like a top 10, and then 5% if they make the cut. Is that pretty standard?
To be honest with you, I didn't talk to too many caddies about specifically, you know, what they made or anything like that. But yeah, generally, I mean, if your player wins, you know, you get there's definitely that bonus. I mean, sometimes the percentile changes. And again, a lot of that has to do with if you're caddying for a new guy versus if you've been with a guy for a while or, you know, he's an established player. I mean, that's all different. But usually, I mean, there's, you know, some players will pay, you know, some expenses for a caddy, like their flight or their hotel room or anything like that. And then they might pay a little less on what they win on their percentage, but then some might just give them a flat fee for the week. And then the caddy's got to take care of their own expenses. But they would make a little more based off how the player did. So there's just a couple different ways to do it, but yeah, they come up with all kinds of arrangements. So it's just different with every guy.
Well, and the thing I always wonder about is, you know, when you've got these guys playing on Sunday, maybe they're 71st, 72nd holes, and you hear all the time, if they double bogey 18, oh, that costs that player, you know, $150,000 or whatever. Well, it costs the caddy a lot, too, because they were, you know, they were set to make however much, and theirs is they're living at a much lower pay scale, and I mean, that's got to be kind of a pretty emotional deal, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. And, you know, if there's certain, like you said, I mean, if a guy's, you know, misses a putt and then, you know, the announcer says, oh, that was a that's $200,000 he left on the course, and then you're thinking, oh man, like had he, you know, $15,000-$20,000 or whatever he just lost there. I mean, that's gonna make more of an impact than a, you know, established tour player. But yeah, it's just, I think going into it, every caddy knows that's just part of the job, and maybe that's why, you know, some people, it's just like any other risk you take. I mean, there's potential for such a great reward, but with that, you kind of take the fact that, you know, sometimes your guy might miss the cut, or, you know, he might just have a bad week and you're out of your pocket that week. But, you know, you take a couple of those weeks, and then when you get the one good week where your guy just comes through on the weekend and you win, then it's just, you know, I mean, it just makes everything worth it, you know, and it, all that money you didn't win earlier, you just make up in one big chunk. So
yeah.
I think that's a lot of the fun of it. You know, that's a lot of the excitement of the job.
Yeah, that's cool. Whenever you were caddying, I mean, obviously you've caddied for Peter for quite a few events. Who was the guy the golfer that Peter played with that you said, man, that guy he's next level. I mean, he's just kind of, you know, unbelievable compared to the guys that I'm used to seeing.
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, there was, well, we were over in Europe. I mean, there's a good amount of guys. I mean, we were in Dubai and we played we just had an off day and we played around with Lee Westwood, and a couple other guys. I think Roman Wattel, who's a good European tour player. We were all playing together and just getting to watch Lee in person and not just, you know, obviously I'd seen him play on TV and I'd, you know, seen him play at tournaments before, but, you know, to be inside the ropes, just kind of on a casual day, watching him play golf and watching him joke around. I mean, the talent that guy has, I mean, it's just unreal. I mean, he'll, you know, he's on that list of people who haven't won a major, but I think he'll be off that list pretty soon. Two guys that we played with, that are doing really good now that weren't as well known then. We were playing in India and we're going off on a practice round and we're making the turn and, we play one hole and a guy hit into us and he asked if he could join us. We're like, yeah, come on. So we introduced himself and it turned out to be, Torbjørn Olesen. So we played with him and I didn't know who he was. I'll admit it, but, we got done with that practice round and Peter and I looked at each other and we're like, who was that guy? I mean, that guy is, I mean, he was just like, I mean, you could just tell just the shots he was hitting is how he was getting around the golf course with such ease. He's just a laid back, really nice guy. And that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and he was, I mean, he's, what is he, like 22 right now, 21, something like that? So he was probably even younger whenever you guys were playing with him.
Yeah, that would have been 2012. I can't remember what month that would have been. It would have been last spring of 2012. So it was a long time ago. But yeah, I'm not exactly sure how old he is, but that was really impressive just getting to watch him. So I guess I'm not as surprised that he's doing as well as he is now, just because we got to see a little glimpse of it, just albeit briefly, but we could tell that he definitely had some game.
Well, and what is it about, like, so you say getting around the golf course easily, what is it about tour pros that makes them, I mean, why do some guys make it and some guys don't? Is it their ball striking ability? Is it putting? I mean, what's the one thing that you feel like stands out from the guys that are, you know, going to become great and the ones that don't?
I mean, the easiest thing to point out is the putting. I mean, guys, good players who win events, they, you know, they get it in the hole. They play good on the weekends. They move on Saturdays when they're supposed to move and they keep it together on Sundays when they're near the lead. But guys just make a lot of putts. I mean, 10 to 15 footers that an amateur golfer, you know, would love to make 3 out of 10 on or whatever the average is. I mean, these guys step up to everyone thinking they can make it and you know, more often than not they do. So that's probably the main thing. I mean, ball striking, there's a lot of good ball strikers. And that was one thing that stood out over there is there's so many good players. So to be the guy that's gonna win on a week to week basis, you know, it can come down to something as little as, you know, a putt dropping here or there or one bad bounce or a ball bouncing out of the fairway into the rough and getting a bad lie, things like that. But, you know, we know that because, I mean, so many of these tournaments come down to just one stroke anyway. But the biggest thing I would say is the putting. Guys on tour just make a lot of putts. I mean, yeah. It's unreal how many they make. So
Well, you mentioned Thorbjørn Olesen, and we've got you and I have a thing that we have called the young guy power rankings, and I think we kind of limited ours to Americans playing either on the PGA Tour or Europe or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who are your and I guess we never really came up with a set of parameters for this, but I'm going to go ahead and say 22, let's say 22 and younger American golfers, who are your top five that you think, like, who are the guys that you think are going to go on to have the top five careers out of that kind of group of golfers right now?
Ooh, you're killing me with the age limitation, because in preparation for this podcast, which I was looking forward to, actually, I do have my list in front of me with ages, and I got a couple 23-year-olds, I got one 24-year-old, but I got a 19-year-old. So I'll go ahead and go with my list. If that'd be all right.
Yeah, I don't want to inhibit you here. I don't want to throw Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy and some of the more well-known guys on there. I want it to be guys that maybe people haven't heard of.
Exactly. Okay. Well, I'm sure a lot of these guys are, you know, people have heard of, but they might not be household names yet.
Right.
I'll say that. The one guy I have, I mean, I'll just go straight down my rankings. Number five, I got Jordan Spieth, you know, former Texas Longhorn. He was an All-American as a freshman. He was a Big 12 Player of the Year as a freshman. You know, he almost won earlier this year at Puerto Rico on the tour. You know, this is his first full season. And one thing that kind of stood out to me about him, he won two U.S. Juniors, and then he was 2011 Walker Cup, or didn't lose a match in the Walker Cup. He was the low am at the U.S. Open last year, I believe. I'd have to double check that, but I believe he was.
I think it was Bo Hostler, wasn't it?
I don't know. That'd be an interesting trivia question.
I'll look it up while you're finishing off your list.
You look that up and tell me what the answer is, because that might win you a free plate of buffalo wings at a sports bar sometime here in the future. Knowing that, but he shot 69-70 on the weekend last year, which don't sleep on that, because I think that was one of the top handful. I mean, he was maybe in the top five on the weekend of just those two scores. So to be able to do that at a U.S. Open, you know, when it only gets tougher as the week goes on, that's pretty impressive. He's 19 years old. So I got him at number five. Number four, I got Luke Guthrie, kid who played at University of Illinois, who congratulations to University of Illinois, by the way, just finished second at Nationals this year. So that was a great finish for them. He came off the web.com tour. He got four top tens in his first five web.com starts, including back-to-back wins in September, you know, right out of the gates. He's got two top tens this year. He got a third at the Honda, just qualified for the U.S. Open this year. He's got Hugo Boss clothing, so life is life's pretty good for Luke Guthrie, so that's a guy. And I got to watch him play a little bit.
The always important sponsor.
I got to watch him play a little bit. Go ahead.
I said the always important sponsor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sponsors is huge. And plus, I mean, like, we'll just, like, I mean, Hugo Boss, I don't know how many, you don't see a lot of that in America. When you do, it's guys coming from overseas. I feel like most of the time wearing Hugo Boss. So for them to sponsor a young American guy, I thought, you know, that says something. So, I mean, they must obviously see a lot in him. But, so I got him at number four. Number three, I got, and these last three are kind of, I don't know, you could kind of go anyway with him, but I got Russell Henley at number three, 24 years old, former player of the year in college while he was at Georgia. I think he was low am at the Pebble Beach U.S. Open in 2010, or he might have tied for it. But I just remember him from, he won a web.com event at his home course at University of Georgia as an amateur in 2011. Then he went on to win two more, in 2012, once he turned professional. So he won the Sony this year. He got six last week at Memorial. But the thing I remember about him is that he got into the Accenture match play and he upset who was maybe the hottest golfer on the planet, Charles Schwartzel at the time, who was a number one seed. And he was a 16 seed. So that's what kind of sticks in my mind most about Russell. So, you know, I think he's destined to do good things.
Yeah, and I think he went on to, I want to say, the quarterfinals of the match play this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think he beat maybe Zach Johnson also or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, he got pretty far. He wasn't just a one and done, so he upset him, and then he might have moved on a couple more matches after that. But I mean, that's pretty impressive to come in as a 16 seed and upset a guy who's playing that well.
Yeah, because Schwartzel had just come. I want to say he had just come off like a top five at the Northern Trust Open or something like that.
Yeah.
He had some
wins on European Tour too. I mean, I think he won in down in South Africa a couple weeks before that, maybe. That was probably right at the end of in December of 2012. So I guess a month or so before that. But he was playing great. I mean, so that's kind of what I remember about Russell from this year so far. Number two is a guy that I've talked to you about before, and that's Harris English. I caddied for when I was caddying for Pete in that web.com event at the Scarlet course, an Ohio State's course in Columbus. He ended up winning that event. He beat John Peterson, who ended up getting second, also an amateur. But yeah, Harris won as an amateur that week. And just getting to watch him play, I mean, I was just so impressed. I mean, just with every aspect of his game, his ball striking. You know, he's a big, solid kid. I mean, he murders the ball off the tee. But he had such good touch around the greens. He putted so well that week. And I just left that thinking, you know, wow, here's a guy that I could see winning a U.S. Open here in the near future. So, he was 2011 Walker Cupper as well. He turned pro rider for the Walker Cup, and then he almost won again. He lost the playoff on a web.com event right after that. And he's a, I just saw the complete package in him. So, you know, he's definitely a guy to keep our eye on.
Yeah, and we need to talk about this for a second, because you told me about Harris English probably back in January and said, hey, you know, whenever you get out to a tournament, go check out his game. And so I was out at Crown Plaza at Colonial, a couple weeks ago, went out to watch him on the range, and he was hitting next to, I want to say, Sangmun Bae.
Yeah.
Who had just won at Byron Nelson. Sangmun Bae was hitting, I don't know, he was probably hitting a 6-iron or maybe a 7-iron or something like that. And Harris English was hitting his 3-wood basically at the same trajectory, which was, it was unbelievable. Like, it was like he could have backed his 3-wood up for at like 270 yards away or so. I mean, it was just, I couldn't believe what I was watching. He's still a young guy and hasn't won a PGA Tour event, but I was really impressed with the way he hits it.
Yeah, definitely. And that was funny. I remember you texting me after you had seen that. Just watch Harris English ... whoa, or something like that. And I was like, see, I told you. I mean, I told you he's a player. but yeah, he's definitely impressive to watch. But yeah, and then my number one guy, I mean, I just from being able to watch him play that much and just from knowing him, I think, you know, I see Peter doing great things. I mean, he won everything as an amateur. He won, you know, the Dixie Amateur, the Sahali Amateur. He won the 2010 U.S. Amateur. He had this mission to go over there and, kind of get away from the States, which kind of blazed his own trail and go out and try to earn his European Tour card, which he came up just short, in 2012. He came out this year. He got a top five at the Tshwane Open down in South Africa, tied for eighth at the Spanish Open. Then he got his first professional win at the European Tour event at the Madeira Islands in Portugal. And that got him into Wentworth. He went out and, you know, in what's considered, I mean, Wentworth's pretty much like the PGA Tour's version of the Players' Championship. So, one of their best fields of the year, and he went out and got a 12th there. So that's just, I just think he's on the right track. He's doing it his way. And I think he's going to be a great player for years on the tour. And it's funny. Go ahead.
It's a really interesting thing because he kind of, I don't want to say there was controversy about him going to Europe or anything like that, but I think it raised a lot of eyebrows of him going over to Europe to start out on, you know, the challenge tour there, because I think a lot of people thought he was going to go web.com or Q School or whatever. But he's gotten a lot of Adam Scott comparisons with Adam Scott starting out on the European tour and then kind of transitioning over and ending up in, on the PGA tour and obviously having a pretty great career so far. Yeah. I mean, he's still kind of, you know, I don't think Adam Scott's done winning tournaments, but it's kind of an interesting comparison, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, he has, I mean, you know, his, I don't want to speak for him or anything like that, but I know that he made his plan to go over there and had a goal, and now he's, you know, now he's got that first win. He's locked up his European Tour card through the end of next year. So he's really on the track that he set out to do. So, you know, I'm happy for him. I mean, that's great that he's doing exactly what he went out to do. So I think right now it looks like a great plan. And I know he has, you know, I'm sure he has no regrets, and he's pumped that he went that direction because it's working out great for him. But he's just a, I mean, just the way he hits the ball. I mean, he's pretty comparable to Harris. I mean, they both just bomb it. You know, when Peter's putting, I haven't seen anybody putt better than that when he's on. And I remember when he played the Masters after he won the USAM, Rory McIlroy tweeted something like, you know, just watch some compliment towards Pete, like just watch Pete play, like wish I could swing like that, LOL or something. And, just gave him a compliment. And I mean, that was, you know, here he is playing as an amateur and Rory, you know, one of the best players of the world is giving him a compliment like that. So, but I think, I mean, you know, there's a lot of good, I mean, there's so many good young Americans right now that are getting ready to start making waves. And I think everybody just wants to kind of reach out and claim the next Tiger Woods right off the bat. And, you know, that's not fair to, well, it's not fair to Tiger, but it's not fair to any of these new guys coming up because they're just trying to do their own thing. And I think it's just, you know, maybe the next few years aren't going to be so much about one player, you know, after Tiger's kind of settled down. You know, maybe it'll just be about a whole group of players just, you know, fighting and competing and pushing each other. And it's an exciting time for the PGA Tour and for golf, I'd like to think so.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about guys like Patrick Reed, Patrick Cantlay, you know, mm-hmm. Scott Langley, just a bunch of, you know, a bunch of guys that are in their really low 20s and having some success on tour. I think in 15 or 20 years, I think you might look back on the University of Georgia team that had Harris English and Russell Henley. And be like, wow, that was, you know, that's unbelievable that those two guys were on the same team.
Yeah, definitely. And Hudson Swafford, too, was on that team, who's, I believe, is playing web.com right now. And he's doing great. And, I mean, he was a great player, too. And then we, you know, obviously Morgan Hoffman, too, who went to school with Peter and played at Oklahoma State. He just qualified to get into the Open this year again, too. So that's another guy I keep your eye on. I mean, he's a fantastic talent also. So future's bright for the young Americans.
Yeah, I agree. And Georgia they never won the NCAA title when those guys were there, did they?
I don't believe they did. I think they won it right like maybe a year or two before those guys got on campus as a freshman. I could be wrong on that, so don't hold me to it. But I don't think they didn't win one while they were there. They got second to Augusta State in 2011, I believe. But they never won one.
Our West, let's see, we had Alabama this year, Texas last year, Augusta State went back to back over Georgia and Oklahoma State. Then A&M won in 2009. Was Ryan Palmer on that 09 A&M team? He's too old for that year, isn't he?
Yeah, that was like that was Bronson Burgoon was on that team. Conrad Schindler, somebody I can't remember who all was on there.
Yeah, Georgia. Last time Georgia won it was in 2005, so that would have been before those guys. Got there. Let's talk. Oh, by the way, U.S. Open last year, you were correct about Spieth being low amateur. He was plus nine. Spieth was plus seven. Hossler was plus nine because he shot a 76 on Sunday, and Cantlay was plus 11. So those were your three low AMs at the U.S. Open.
All right, point for me.
Yeah, and Russell Henley did not advance after he beat Schwartzel this year. He actually lost to Jason Day, who lost to Matt Kuchar in the semifinal.
Point subtracted then, because I thought he got on farther than that. Okay,
real quick before we go, I want to talk about the U.S. Open. And what I want to do is kind of just run through the top 15, top 20 in the world golf rankings and talk briefly about whether or not that guy has a chance to win the U.S. Open this year. Whether we think that guy potentially could win has the game to win a U.S. Open, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. All right. So, and you're gonna do this with me too, so we can compare them.
Yeah. We'll do that.
Perfect. Okay. All right.
So first one's Tiger. I think we're probably in agreement on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say he looks like he has the kind of game that might could win a major. So I'd say don't sleep on Tiger. But it should be known. If he's spraying it, I mean, this is Marion's a shorter course. I mean, it's under 7,000 yards, barely. But
yeah, and here's the thing, though: the last two tournaments, Players Championship and Memorial, he's been really good off the tee. Obviously, he won at the Players Championship, but his issue at Memorial wasn't his driver or anything off the tee. I think he was, I don't know, top 10 in fairways hit or something. I mean, a ridiculous stat for Tiger, something that he doesn't usually do. So I think if you're a Tiger fan, that's encouraging going to the U.S. Open.
Yeah, definitely. But I'd say Tiger's the front runner. We're in agreement on that. So
yeah, for sure. Number two, Rory McIlroy.
I'll say this. He definitely can. I would be surprised if he did. I'd be surprised if he did this. I think it's just taken him a while to get used to some of the changes he's had, you know, going on with his, whether it's his equipment or, you know, whatever else he's got going on. So I don't know. I would just be surprised if he came out and won this week. Would you agree, or you think he can do it, or?
Yeah, I think he can. I think the demise of Rory McIlroy has been greatly overstated by the general golfing public, because he's played in 9 PGA Tour events this year, and he's got 4 top 10s. And granted, some of those are, he shot a 67 on Sunday, even though he was out of it the whole tournament, and he sneaked into the number 9 spot. But still, I mean, I think people just expected him to come out and be Tiger Woods from 1999 or whatever, however old Tiger was whenever, what is Rory, like 23, 24, something like that.
Real young.
I mean, that was Tiger in 99, 2000. And that's not who he is. I think he's more Phil Mickelson than he is Tiger in terms of being able to get super hot and nobody being able to catch him. And then he's also got cold streaks. He misses cuts. You know, that's just kind of who he is, and I think people don't, I don't know, I guess they just don't realize that, or I don't know what they expect from him. But yeah, I'd be shocked if he won at Marion.
Yeah, agreed.
Number three is, this is an interesting one, Adam Scott.
I was glad to see him win the Masters. I kind of always thought that would be his, when he was going to win a major, that was going to be the one. I was crushed for him when what happened in the British last year when he lost right at the end there. I'd say he has a good chance, you know. Never bet against the long putter in majors, I guess. So, I would put him above Rory as far as chances to win, most likely. But I'm not ready to put him up there next to Tiger yet as far as who's got the best look.
Yeah, I think he could. I think this might be the major that suits him the least, maybe. I think the difficult thing is going back to back in majors. It's just I just think that's a really tough thing to do. So I'm gonna say no on him.
Okay.
Next one, Matt Kuchar.
I love Matt Kuchar. I mean, he's definitely one of my favorite golfers just to watch play, just from his just the way he plays the game, just kind of his attitude, just he's always smiling, you know, he's laid back. And then he went to Memorial, and then you see his two kids and his wife there. It's just like the perfect, you know, like the perfect American family kind of deal. But I'd say he's got a good chance. You know, his last two events, he won last week, and then his, you know, last tournament before that, it was a second place at Colonial. So he's the hottest going in to this tournament. And I think it's easy for people, you know, he's going to show up on a lot of people's radars as, you know, when we're talking about picks to win the U.S. Open, Kuchar's name's going to fly around a lot just because he's the hottest player going in. But, sometimes it's dangerous to say that when you're picking guys, just because, you know, U.S. Open's such a different test. But I think he has a really good chance. I'd say no worse than a top 10 I expect from him this week.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said. I think he might actually be my number two behind Tiger right now. And by the way, is there a golf fan out there that watches Matt Kuchar and says, yeah, I don't really like that guy. Like I dislike Matt Kuchar. Is there anyone that says that?
Not that I know of. And if there is, I mean, there's your next podcast guest right there. but I don't know. I don't know anybody that watches golf and says, God, that Matt Kuchar just looks like a jerk. You know, but I mean, he looked like the nicest guy in the world. So,
yeah. I agree. And I'm all in on Matt Kuchar winning the U.S. Open.
Yeah. Perfect.
Justin Rose.
Now, you're going to be impressed by this, but don't be, because all it took was a little bit of research on my part. But I have Justin Rose down to mention to you as someone I really, really, really like this week, and here's why. And I'm going stats on you, if that's okay.
Okay, yeah, go stats on me. I like it.
If you look at Marion, I mean, it's a shorter course. You got to drive the ball straight. But I saw something interesting just when I was kind of looking at the course, because I didn't know too much about it. I mean, they hadn't really had anything there since the Walker Cup was there in 2009, but they had the USAM there a few years before that. According to the yardages per hole that they've listed, the par threes, there's three par threes. There's number three is 256, number nine is 236, and number 17 is 246. Justin Rose is number one on tour this year in greens in regulation of 200 yards or more, which is, I mean, when you're talking about these long par threes, you know, having to hit the green when you have this crazy rough all around it, you know, a guy hitting his three and four irons, you know, if he's the best on tour right now at doing that, you know, that definitely gives him an upper hand. You know, plus he's eighth on tour right now and scrambling too. So, driving accuracy, he's 20th. So, those three things, I think, kind of, you know, put him up there as maybe this is the week for him to kind of jump off that bubble of, you know, never won a major before. He's already got four top tens this year, so he's having a good year. But I like Justin Rose. He would probably be my second behind Tiger. I'd probably slip Kuchar to third. So
I love the 200 yard or over 200 yard greens in regulation stat. I might have to use that in any and all radio interviews I do this week.
Exactly, spread it like wildfire. I mean, yeah, I'm just trying to make your job easier. That's all. That's all.
Yeah, I'll just copyright Colin Carstens and move on.
Exactly. Yeah, give him my number if anyone has any questions. So
that's awesome. That's good stuff. I agree. I think Justin Rose he's up there for me too. I don't know. The biggest thing for me, I definitely think he can compete for the U.S. Open. I just don't know. I don't know what's in him on the back nine on Sunday, if he's one back or one up or whatever. I just, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if he's got that in him to close that out, because it's such a difficult thing to do. And I know he's won a lot of tournaments before and won on the European Tour and whatever, but it's different in a major, and he hasn't done it before. And it's And it's something that you just kind of, like Adam Scott, you know, from, was it 2 years ago at the Masters, like you go through not having been able to do it, and then you kind of understand what it takes to be able to do it. And I don't know. I'm not sure if that, if Justin Rose has that, in his game right now, and not to say that he'll never win a major, but, I don't know. It would be interesting to see him and say Graham McDowell, you know, within one of each other on the back nine on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. You know, it seems like Justin Rose, we're used to him starting hot in these majors. I mean, I felt like there was a period of about 4 years where you could just pencil him in as the first round leader at Augusta. But
it's true. But I think like 3 of the last 5 years he's led after either the first round or the second round.
Yeah, I try to only get in Masters pools that involves just picking whoever's you think is going to win day one, and then I usually just put Justin Rose on auto pick and then just leave it, and I do pretty well. So
yeah, we'll see you guys next year for the first round Masters draft.
Yeah, for real. But I think you're right. I mean, I think if he let's see him get in contention on Sunday, you know, maybe come up just short, get a second or something like that, but be there and see how he handles it. Like you said, coming down the back nine on Sunday. But I think he's got a chance, but I think you're right. I think, maybe let's see it first before we can pencil him in as a favorite.
Okay, next one, number 6, is Brant Snedeker.
I'm not picking Snedeker this week. I just think, you know, he was so hot to start the year, and then after he got injured, well, I can't remember, is it ribs or his back or something?
It was his ribs. He's actually got a condition where his bones and his ribs don't regenerate, and so they become brittle. And it's not good. It's not a good thing.
I didn't even know that. So that's sad to hear. I mean, I do like Branson. I mean, that's another guy who, you know, put him in the Kuchar category of guys just seems like, you know, they're genuine and just super nice and, you know, real easy to root for. But I think he'll have a good rest of the year. I just think, you know, it might take him a little time coming back from taking some time off to kind of hit his full stride again. And I wouldn't be picking him this week, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm out on Snedeker this week as well. He shot an 80 at the Memorial last week.
Yeah, that doesn't, that's not too good.
He shot an 80 on Friday to miss the cut. He's been erratic ever since he won at Pebble. So I'm out on Snedeker this week also. Next All one, right. And we'll just go top 10. So we'll go 4 more right here.
Okay.
Luke Donald.
I like it. I don't like his chances as much as Kuchar, and I don't like him as much as Rose. But you can never count out a guy who, I mean, his bunker game is unreal. His chipping good, his putting so solid. I could be wrong on this, but wasn't he the guy who had the no three putt streak that was just something crazy long? You know, I don't know if it's still going on. Maybe it was last year or something, but I think he's got a good chance. Maybe not of winning, but when you're that solid around the greens, you know, especially at the U.S. Open, I feel like you're always going to be in it. So I'd say he'll be a name we're following on Sunday, but I don't know. Just I'd have a tough time picking him over Kuchar, Woods, or Scott, or Rose. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to say no on Luke Donald. By the way, he went 449 holes without a three putt.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is a joke. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this weekend I went 4 holes without a three putt, roughly.
Was it on a video game or in real life?
Yeah, I was playing Tiger Woods, and then I three putted, so I just quit.
I'm going to say no on Luke Donald. I don't know. I struggle with these English guys, and I wrote about this around the Masters, and it's just like him and Poulter and Rose and Westwood. They haven't, I don't know. It seems like at least one of them should have won a major or should have won kind of, I guess I'm talking about a major, and they just haven't. And I'm sure it's a coincidence that they're, you know, probably the top 4 English guys and haven't won a major, but it just, I don't know, something turns me off about these guys in majors, even though I know they have, you know, Luke Donald's got, he's the number 7 player in the world. Like, of course he could win a major, but yeah, I'm out on him this week. I don't think he will. Number 8 is Graham McDowell.
Graham McDowell is another guy I had kind of jotted down. You know, he won at the Heritage earlier this year. You know, with that last day, it was so windy, tough scoring conditions, and he kind of came came back and snatched a win there. I'm going to throw some more stats at you because I know you love him. He's number one on tour this year in both driving accuracy and scrambling. So, you know, if you're hitting fairways and then getting up and downs, you know, that's a pretty solid combination out at Marion, I would think.
Both of those stats seem fairly pertinent for a U.S. Open.
I feel like they can't be pushed aside. I agree. But and I mean he's won one before too. So that I mean he's not going to be, you know, like if you're comparing like him to Justin Rose. I mean if they're coming down the stretch on Sunday, you almost got to go with McDowell just because he's been there, he's done it. You know, he's come up clutch on the back nine Sunday at the U.S. Open before. So. Even though Rose might be having a slightly better year this year, I think that experience is so valuable that you'd have to give him the nod.
Yeah, I think I'll always remember McDowell's U.S. Open as the round that Dustin Johnson shot like a 98 or whatever he shot.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're still looking for his ball on number three.
I'm going to say no on McDowell also. I really don't have a good reason, and your stats probably should sway me otherwise. And I don't know. He's another guy that I really kind of like a lot. Like I think he's just kind of an interesting figure for golf and usually has interesting things to say and seems to take an interest in things outside of golf. And I feel like I don't know that that's affected his game, but it seems like he's you know interested in kind of expanding his business ventures. I guess we'll say it like that. And so I don't know if he's as locked in as he maybe was earlier in his career on winning a major and stuff like that. So I'm going to go ahead and say no on Graham McDowell. Number nine is Louis Oosthuizen.
I'm just going to say no. I don't think, and for no other reason, just that I think some of the other names we've read have a little bit better chance. I mean, I think he'll have a fine week. I just, I don't really know. I can't really give you a good reason why I don't think he'll win. I just, because he's obviously had a pretty good year. He's playing good, but, you know, I just think, like you said, I mean, coming down the back nine, I mean, he won the British. But, you know, the U.S. Open is just so different. I'll still take Rose or Kuchar or Tiger ahead of him, for sure.
I'm going to say yes on Louis Oosthuizen. Your stat, it's not a stat, your feeling about Harris English, you know, you think he'll win a U.S. Open. I think Louis Oosthuizen will win a U.S. Open. And I don't know that it'll be this year. I love the way he hits the ball. And... you know, I was actually talking to Charles Howell about this, and he said that the three best swings on tour were Louis Oosthuizen, Adam Scott, and Charles Schwartzel. And I just, I can't think of three better, I can't think of one better one than those three.
Exactly.
So yeah, I'm in on Louis Oosthuizen this week. I definitely think he can. He can be top five or maybe even win the thing.
Yeah.
Number 10.
And before we leave Oosthuizen, I mean, I'm not by any means, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I'm not by any means knocking Louis whatsoever. I mean, I think, you know, he's definitely a guy who could, you know, I don't know why I'm just not picking him this week. Maybe I'm the outlier on that, but
it's understandable. Number 10, and this is a good one to end on. Number 10 in the world right now is Phil Mickelson.
Wow. I mean, where do you start? I mean, you could go back to, I mean,
should we take this to a part two?
I think we might just have to have a whole separate part two and just call it Phil. and that could probably lead to a part three, but, I'm going to say no. And it breaks my heart because, ever since I was 12 years old, I feel like Phil's the guy that you know, in the back of your mind, you kind of want to win on Sunday. I mean, I hated what happened in 06. I remember watching every single hole. You know, I wanted to win that one so bad. But I don't know. You just never know. I mean, he definitely has the game, but it's like it's all about chances, and maybe that was his chance, you know, to win the U.S. Open, and it kind of slipped away. So, I don't know if his opportunity has passed him by. He's definitely not done. I wouldn't say that, but I just don't have a good feeling. I just wouldn't be picking him this week.
Yeah, I agree. I'm out on him this week as well. I think that, you know, I think people don't really realize it, but Phil, I think, only has 3 or 4 more years in which picking him at a major is even really reasonable. I think past that, you're kind of just hoping that he'll win a major. I'm with you. It kills me that he hasn't won a U.S. Open, especially after what happened in 06. And just, I he wants to, he's got his Masters and he's done that. And you know, he wants to win the U.S. Open so bad. And,
For sure.
I mean, it would be, to me, it would be, I don't know, maybe outside of Tiger, the best storyline of you know, him getting the U.S. Open late in his career.
But
I'm with you. I don't think he's going to do it. Did you have anybody else written down maybe outside the top 10 that you felt like was going to have a big week?
I think you got to look at, you know, like I said, when they had the Walker Cup out there in 2009, when the U.S. won that year. Ricky Fowler was 4-0 that week, played fantastic. You know, I guess he's kind of had a decent season this year. I don't know if by his own admission that he would tell you it's been a good season or a great season. But I think there's just something to be said about going back to a place where you're comfortable and you know you've had success. I mean, 4-0 in the Walker Cup on that course, and here you are going back to it. You know, those good feelings are back, and you're remembering all these good shots you hit. You're comfortable. You know, so I think that's a guy definitely to keep on the radar. What about you? Do you have any under the radar guys? Any sneak picks that we need to think about?
Well, we're both going to look like kind of homers here, but the guy that kind of pops in my head is Bo Van Pelt. I think that, I don't know, he's kind of a guy like Rose, where I'm like, okay, you know, great player, hits the ball well. Been playing pretty decently of late, but you know, what do you got on Sunday? You know, what's going to happen if you're on the back nine on Sunday? I think he can get to Sunday and maybe, you know, be in contention. I just don't know. I don't know what happens after that. I don't know. I like the way he hits it. I think you know, he's contended at the Masters the last few years. He's had great Masters appearances.
Hole in ones and everything.
Yeah. On was it 16 that he had the, he shot like a 64 at the final round of the Masters last year when I think he was playing in like the first group of the day, but he put up a 64 and it was pretty outstanding. So maybe he does have it in him on Sunday. I think it's a lot different coming in the last group though. So
yeah, definitely. I'll agree with you. I'll agree with you on Bo. Good pick there by you. Props.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Well, Colin, I appreciate you coming on. We've talked about a lot of stuff today.
Time.
It's been a lot of fun, and we will definitely do it again.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. See you.